So it's Sunday night, it's just gone 8 p.m. Welcome to the Tony Legend Show here on Manchester Radio Online. Got a really big show coming up for you tonight. Over the next 2 hours, we are going to get deep into the 9/11 cover-up and the ongoing fight for a new investigation into the attacks which have cost so many lives. Not just in New York City on the day, but 9/11 has cost lives of thousands of first responders, eyewitnesses, Afghans, Iraqis and Pakistanis, and many more besides, as well as, of course, British and American troops. 9/11 was a catalyst which saw the Patriot Act introduced, as well as the UK's similar so-called anti-terror legislation allowing stop and search, prolonged detention and laws which give the Home Secretary power to indefinitely detain people without charge. After 9/11 we saw illegal imprisonment and torture, secret prisons, fingerprinting at American airports, ID card introduction and all the rest of it. The world we live in right now in 2010 is a world shaped by 9/11, and yet, almost a decade on, there are still many unanswered questions about what really happened on that day. There's so much evidence which directly contradicts the official story, and so the need for the truth to come out is so much more important now than ever. 9/11 is still being used by Barack Obama to justify sending more troops to Afghanistan. It's still being used by Tony Blair to justify the Iraq War. And the hard evidence is still being ignored by the mainstream media. Tonight on the show, I have two distinguished guests who have been fighting for 9/11 truth for a long time. Andrew Johnson joins me later. He has been involved in several high profile cases, court cases in the US concerning 9/11. And Ian Henshaw will be joining me shortly. He is from Reinvestigate 9/11 and recently had former Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney here in the UK trying to raise the issue with British MPs. So I hope you can stick around for the next couple of hours. And tonight I really want this show to be as interactive as possible. I have typed up some info about the guests and I'm going to send it to everyone who adds us on MSN tonight. So please do that. If you want to get involved in the show tonight, the MSN ad is studio@manchesterradioonline.com. studio@manchesterradioonline.com. Say hello and I will send you the info pack. And I always want to hear from you if you're listening. So please feel free to send in any questions or comments that you have for myself or any of tonight's guests. In real time, just send us the questions and I'll hopefully throw them towards the guests who will be on the phone. So add us now, studio@manchesterradioonline.com. And as I said, I've got a little present to send everyone tonight who adds us on MSN and says hello. It's the Tony Legend Show info pack, and the info pack contains info about tonight's guests, links to their websites, links to other great independent news sites, links to the Tony Legend podcasts from weeks gone by, and a few other cheeky links for you to check out as well. So please get in touch. MSN, add us now, studio@manchesterradioonline.com. We're going to speak with tonight's first guest, Ian Henshaw, from Reinvestigate 9/11, after this. It's by Riz MC, and it's called Post 9/11 Blues. And you're listening to Tony Legend Show here on Manchester Radio Online.
This is the Post 9/11 Blues. What can I do? I got the post 9/11 blues on the telly, nothing but the post 9/11 news. War, Iraq, suicide bombs. Stop hogging the limelight and make some room for my songs. Anyway, it's all reruns. We need a new war. Bush, go get Iran. I heard it talking about your mom. Change your channel, watch some telly for kids. But what's this?
Hi kids, welcome to Fun Fun Fundamentalist.
In the break, Nike's advertising bomb-proof kicks. They're even showing Bin Laden's cave on Cribs. So I pick up a respectable magazine. Told me about the new post 9/11 categories. Israeli fighters are soldiers, Irish are paramilitary, and dark ones are terrorists. That simple can it be? But not me. My friends go, Riz is still one of us. But if I haven't shaved, they won't sit with me on the bus. Everybody do the post 9/11 dance. Look scared, shake your ass when the bombs go blast. Everybody shake your post 9/11 thongs. Overdose gear was wrong. Jackson will drop a bomb. Sing a song, sing along. Bush and Blair in a tree. K-I-L-L-I-N-G. Shave your beard, if you're brown, and you better salute the ground. Or do you like Brazilians to shoot your ass down? Post 9/11, getting around can be expensive. Cost 12 dead Iraqis for a litre of unleaded. And even Green Cross codes all change. They just teach kids duck around low-flying planes. On the tube, if you see a dude with a rucksack and a beard, move carriages, mate. Fuck that. They cancel Christmas because of Santa Claus' beard. His magic red sack got confiscated as a suspect package. No need for Halloween, 9/11's more scary. Osama been gobbling his kids and his hairy. Hear a knocking at the door at early dawn in the dark. It's MI6, they'll trick or treat you through a week in Belmarsh. Forget Guy Fawkes, he's lame. Gunpowder plots don't really compare to planes. So no bonfire, Halloween or Christmas, they're done. We do it all on one day, Merry 911. Everybody do the post 9/11 dance. Look scared, shake your ass, run the boats go. Everybody shake your post 9/11 thongs. Hold the dust,
ID cards and a congestion charge at their extending farm, and electronic tags on the chaff children's arms. Of course we need Belmarsh, fuck 28 days. We should put the whole of Holdem in its own fucking cage. Move the hounds, no underground, so nothing could go wrong. Luton's already moving, Bradford's already gone. We're all suspects, so literally be watching your back. I farted and got arrested for a chemical attack. Dropped some litter on the street and I caused a bomb scare. But told police my name was John, they thought they caught the wrong bread. It's okay. Post 9/11, I've been getting paid. Playing terrorists on telly, getting songs made.
But will it get airplay, geezer?
If BBC don't want it, I'll send it to Al Jazeera.
Yeah.
Everybody do the post 9/11 dance. Everybody shake your post 9/11 song. So the dossier was wrong. Jackson Wills, come along, sing a song, sing along. Bush and Blair in the tree. K-I-L-L-I-S-G. Shave your beard if you're brown, and you'd best salute the crown, or they view you like Brazilians and shoot your ass down. Everybody do the post 9/11 dance. Look scared, shake your ass while the bombs go. Everybody shake your post 9/11 song. So the dossier was wrong. Jackson Wills.
Tony Legend Show here on Manchester Radio Online. That was Riz MC and Post 9/11 Blues. Alright then, time to introduce my first guest tonight. He is Ian Henshaw from Reinvestigate 9/11. Ian, welcome to the Tony Legend Show.
Hello, Tony.
Alright. Something coming through there, crazy. Alright, there we go. Sorry about that. We're live now. Ian, how you doing?
Not too bad, thanks.
Alright, now for folks who don't know who you are, just tell us please a wee bit about yourself and what you do in your organisation.
Well, Reinvestigate 9/11 has been set up to try and put pressure on the American government from here to get a proper investigation going into 9/11. Not that we think that the American government, you know, would have a decent investigation. They obviously need to be pressured into having a proper one, but they've got the information. So in the end, we're going to have to get into their files if we ever do want to find out what happened over 9/11.
And recently you were in the company of Cynthia McKinney, one of the most honest, trustworthy and most decent figures in American politics, in my opinion anyway.
Absolutely.
Please tell us a bit about her visit, how it all came about, what you did and how people responded to her information.
Well, we noticed that there's some people who, you know, appear to be on the left who were saying that you should believe the official story about 9/11, that if you don't believe it, you're a conspiracy theorist and all this sort of stuff. That's not what most people on the global left say, but there are influential people here saying it. So we had a look around, and we noticed that the truly independent left-wing people who don't have foundation money aren't controlled by some sectarian political group or other. They've all come to realise that 9/11 is a huge open goal, you know. The story is ridiculous as it stands. And really we should be asking questions about it. And in particular, Cynthia McKinney, who's sort of really one of America's leading world-class politicians. Yes, it's true she got kicked out of the Congress, but she had a very long struggle. She got back in a couple of times. They kicked her out a couple of times. And, you know, I can't tell you what her plans are because they're still confidential, but we haven't heard the last of her at all, even in American politics, let alone in global politics.
And just tell us a bit about what you did whenever she was over here in the UK.
Well, we invited her over here. She's been on a European tour organised by Reinvestigate 9/11 sort of sister organisations and other people as well. She represents many different political groups, you know, women, black people. She's not that interested in 9/11 actually, personally. You know, she just thinks it should be reinvestigated because it's obviously a load of rubbish what they're saying about it. So we fitted her in basically here in London, and we had a meeting in Parliament, which we invited all the MPs and peers to. And of course none of them came, but they do see the invitation, which has information on it, which they don't get through the mass media. So it's useful, and we're hoping to set up a special parliamentary group after the election as well. It's got nuisance value, you know, and it presents evidence to Parliament and possibly to the media, which they're trying to suppress.
And one of the meetings that you had with Cynthia was it in like one of the meeting rooms at Parliament buildings?
Yeah, it was in one of the committee rooms. We've got an MP who's supporting us, and you know, he books rooms for us. And we've had a lot of interest actually from, you know, shadow cabinet level MPs, research assistants. So, you know, they're very busy. They get invited to about 60 meetings on any one day that they could go to. So we haven't had like dozens of them coming around to our meetings, but we have had quite a lot of good interest, and we think that after the election, we should be able to set up a proper parliamentary group.
And at one of the meetings held when Cynthia McKinney was over, I've got a quote from you saying, the media should no longer ignore the unanswered 9/11 questions. How do you think the media can get away with continually ignoring the serious questions raised by the 9/11 Truth Movement?
Well, I think the only time that they would have done anything else than ignore them was in the first few weeks, the first few days and weeks after the 9/11 attacks. And, you know, basically 9/11 was a coup. We don't know exactly what sort of a coup, perhaps, but it was a coup. You know, the media were all there ready, pushing the line. They shouldn't have done that, you know, because the Oklahoma bomb was blamed on Arab terrorists, and it turned out it was an American Special Forces guy, and that had only happened a few years earlier. So as soon as, on day one, the media all pushed the official 9/11 story, you know, we were really talking about a coup. And the question is, you know, who's got the guts to sort of put their head over the parapet and start questioning it? And, of course, the really nasty thing is that people, you know, who you'd like to be able to trust, you know, people like Charlie Booker, and, you know, there's other people I could mention, actually go out of their way to attack people who have been, you know, questioning the 9/11 story. I think they're just stupid and misinformed, but, you know, it's unfortunate, but That is the problem. The weight of evidence is huge, and it's working in the background, but it'll be a little bit longer yet before the media, you know, accept that they've got the story totally wrong.
Well, in my eyes, the mainstream media has got no credibility anymore. From not just 9/11, but they don't come clean about major issues such as weapons of mass destruction, Dr. Kelly, 7/7. Like, there's a clear pattern emerging, and the mainstream media will not tell you the truth when it comes to the big issues.
That's totally right. I mean, after the Iraqi weapons of mass destruction, that's in a sense even clearer than 9/11, because they can still claim that, you know, we're wrong about 9/11, but now everybody agrees with Iraq that there weren't any weapons of mass destruction. And, of course, as normal, they blame it on the politicians. But actually, it was the media. You know, politicians, you know, everybody knows they lie, but they think the media don't lie, at least not in this sort of outrageous way. The media should have had their own investigation into why they believed the official story about the weapons of mass destruction. Even the U.S. Senate had an investigation into it, actually, and they put it down to groupthink, which is a conspiracy theory when the official establishment believes it. It gets called groupthink then. But the media never did. Professors of journalism, media conferences are going on all the time. And to my knowledge, there was never one major conference or investigation as to why the media got it so badly wrong. And that really is the proof that the media are stitched up. You know, they're not actually interested in the truth.
And how damaging is this to democracy, freedom and justice in general?
Entirely, totally damaging. I mean, when we say the media, fortunately we're talking about the establishment mainstream media. Meanwhile, fortunately, you know, as a godsend, we've got the internet and alternative media where, you know, people know are much better informed, basically. So hopefully, you know, the new media will take over more and more.
That's under attack at the minute, though, with things such as the Digital Economy Bill and the Cyber Security Act.
It is. They're creeping in. They're definitely creeping in, no doubt about it.
I think they feel very threatened by, I mean, for example, a show like this, we're on air now, but online only, so we don't answer to Ofcom. Basically, if we were answering to Ofcom, we probably wouldn't have this conversation, because they would, Ofcom would probably just ring the station manager and say, get that boy off the radio.
Yeah, no, that's right. It's totally stitched up. And what I'd just like to mention to, you know, people who aren't in the media business is, when you go to a journalist and tell them that the official story is about 9/11 isn't right, and most of the reactions that they'll come up with are not entirely honest reactions. I mean, one thing they say is, oh, I've never heard that before. Well, definitely they often have heard it before and they're not telling the truth when they say that. Pretty much everybody in the media knows there's a huge amount of doubt about the official story of 9/11 by now. Another thing they say is, I don't think that's very interesting, when actually the situation is that they haven't got any choice. It's their bosses who lay down the law. Their editors tell them what story. They don't choose the story to write. The editor chooses the story to write. But nobody wants to admit. Well, I mean, on the railways, you know, they'll admit that they get bossed around, or in any normal job. But for some reason, the media would hate to admit that the story is set from above, and they're just the flunkies carrying out the job they get given.
Indeed. I've got a couple of things here from listeners on MSN. Ruth says, some of the hijackers that were said to have been crashing into the towers are still alive and well and never had any part of the hijacking. I mean, that's been even reported by the BBC. That's one of the few truths that the BBC did tell.
Yeah, the problem is that when you've got a huge force of people all there being paid to support the official story, they can, you know, they can always muddy the waters over practically anything. It seems pretty clear to me that several of the hijackers are alive and well. But there again, you know, maybe Al-Qaeda could have nicked their identities and used it. Do you know what I mean? It's, you can argue the toss. It's when you stand back and you get the look at all the every aspect of the official story is doubtful and controversial. That's what I find so damaging. You know, one thing here or there, you can sort of give them a break. But when it's every aspect of it, how they got into the United States, why the FBI were taken off following them, how they got onto the planes, how they could have taken over the planes, how they could have steered them so incredibly, you know, skillfully.
Where was NORAD? Why did the building fall down? Why
exactly,
did people say,
you know,
about explosions?
Why did the media immediately decide it was Arab terrorists? How did the, as you say, how did the buildings collapse? What happened at the Pentagon? Why haven't the black boxes been found? It just goes on and on and on, you know.
Yeah,
and if they wanted to, they made such huge capital out of 9/11. Why are they keeping so much of it so secret? And it must, you know, obviously because they've got something to hide.
Yeah, it's just it's logic.
Yeah, you know, it's just they'd have had a show trial of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed as soon as they could have done, you know.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. It's not going to fit. That's why they won't have a trial of him. That was just the Obama regime, you know, who weren't fully briefed on the situation. They can't possibly let Khalid Sheikh Mohammed go into an open trial.
Of course.
It'll probably show that he wasn't anything to do with it, or totally brainwashed or zombied out.
He's been being tortured for 5 years at least.
Being tortured for 3 years.
3 years. We've got a skeptic on Skype here. Ace says, so if they reinvestigate 9/11 and find there isn't a conspiracy, will Ian and his cronies call it a day, or will it be yet another conspiracy? I'll answer that first, and then Ian, I'll let you have your say on that. Ace, if they were to reinvestigate 9/11, they would, I mean, on any level, no matter what level you look at it, it is a conspiracy because people have grouped together to attack someone else or to cause someone else harm. So on any level, no matter what you think of it, it is a conspiracy. But has there been a cover-up is the question, and what was the involvement of the United States government? What did they know? When did they know it? And who was pulling the strings? Who was able to make NORAD stand down? Or who was able to block the investigation into the NIST investigation into why the towers fell? There are a lot of very credible questions, and the fact that the United States government and a lot of other governments and a lot of top media fail to even answer these questions or even look at these questions, it smells like a rat to me. Ian, what's your take on that?
Yeah, totally. I mean, the fact is that we now know. The interesting thing is that from the public record, we know a huge amount, the sort of stuff which your gullible caller, I would say, the person who believes the official story, the issue they raise. Well, the answer is that according to the media's own reports, according to the official investigations mostly, a huge amount of very, very damaging evidence has come out, particularly beyond any doubt. They were lying when they said that they had no warning, that they couldn't have predicted it. We now know that that was an utter shamefaced, total, complete lies. So if an investigation only served to find out that the official story was completely true, except for what they've now admitted as lies, the public would still really be shocked to think that our troops are dying in Afghanistan over it.
Indeed. Nick on the MSN says the media should be ashamed of themselves. They are not journalists, they are men. These are not journalists, they are not men. I don't know. It doesn't quite make sense, but I know he's getting
on. What he means is that, you know, they haven't got the guts of the average soldier or even the average war journalist.
Indeed, I feel ashamed by the media, and I'm like, I've been training in the media for many years, and I feel ashamed and let down by the whole process.
They've got to start off by admitting that there is not a free media, that it's controlled by the editors and the proprietors. If they could once admit that, I think we'd have made a lot of progress, because then, you know, you wouldn't get journalists going out proselytizing for the official story. you'd get journalists doing what they used to do in Eastern Europe, which is to say, look, you know, I've got a wife and kids to feed. Of course I'm telling a pack of lies, you know, but everybody knows it. And if the media would just start admitting that unofficially, then, you know, I think the whole thing would crumble a lot faster.
Indeed, right. Let's talk about something that I've seen you mention before. Bush administration's Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill said that the invasion of Iraq was being planned in detail by a White House cabal of Cheney, Rice and CIA boss George Tenet 9 months before the 9/11 attacks took place. They knew they needed what they called a Pearl Harbor event before they could invade Iraq. Surely this alone needs thorough investigation, and surely that is treason at the highest levels imaginable.
It is. I mean, that's another example of the paper trail which we now have, you know. I mean, the witness was the Treasury Secretary. He's, you know, he's not a, you know, he hasn't got an axe to grind. He was just really shocked to see that cabal in operation in 9 months before the 9/11 attacks. And it is the same crowd of people who, when you look at the details of 9/11, are the ones you become the most suspicious of, you know, Cheney and Tenet, basically. That in itself, I mean, maybe they could defend themselves by saying, well, it was just bad judgment that we devoted the whole of our first cabinet meeting to, you know, the invasion of Iraq. We didn't know, it was just good luck, it happened later. But, I mean, how extraordinary that they would devote their first meeting. These are busy people. You know, they're not like students who spend an hour or two chatting about the meaning of life. You know, these guys spend 5 minutes on matters involving millions and billions of dollars. They're not going to spend their whole cabinet meeting talking about something which was just a fantasy, which everybody, of course, thought it was at that point. They must have had inside knowledge that 9/11 was going to happen, or something like it.
Indeed. Well, this kind of brings me on to the next thing. I have a friend who was a tank driver. He was actually the first trips into Basra in 2003 in a big Challenger tank. And I asked him, where were you on 9/11? And his response led me down a rabbit hole, which kind of basically has led me to where I am today. He said, me and thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of other British soldiers were in Oman training for a desert war as 9/11 happened. So I looked into this operation that he was on, and it was called Operation Swift Sword, and it was Sans Serif, but I think it's got two, it's like a double meaning, one's in Arab, it's got an Arabic name and an English name. It's translated into Swift Sword, and it was taking place on 9/11, and it had been in the planning for years, and it had only been underway 4 weeks from before September 11th, 2001, so it kind of started in August. It had been years in the planning, but they actually set sail from, you know, Portsmouth or Plymouth, wherever it is down there on the south coast, where the Navy is based, and it took off and it went right round to Oman, and it was like a staged invasion of Oman. Obviously Oman was cooperative in the whole thing, but in effect what it was a massive mission, training for a desert war. It was the biggest mobilisation of the British Armed Forces since the Falklands. So do you think this is just a coincidence that most of the British Army was out in the Middle East training for the desert war as 9/11 took place?
Well, it could have been a coincidence that it was as 9/11 takes place. If it wasn't the coincidence, it would imply that they had some more aggressive plan even right then, that maybe they thought they were going to be able to stick it on Saddam Hussein. Because remember that with the anthrax attacks, they very nearly did stick it on Saddam Hussein, the whole of the 9/11 thing, you know, because straight after 9/11 there were the anthrax attacks, which it turned out later, you know, came from the US military, which
Indeed.
Is, of course, hugely suspicious in itself.
That's an inside job in itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and once again, you know, that's just based on the official record. They claim it was sort of lone people who did it, but...
And he winds up dead himself.
Likely. And they definitely would have stuck, you know, and so maybe they were planning to go straight into Iraq right then. But if you assume that's speculation, I would say that what we definitely know is that for at least 5 years, when President Clinton's anti-terrorism directive was brought in 1995, at the same time as the Oklahoma bomb, by the way, which I think was meant to herald it in as the war on terror, you know, even then.
There's a lot of questions about the Oklahoma City bombing.
Yeah, that's right. And it turned, well, there it certainly is. But one thing is for sure, is it wasn't carried out by Arab terrorists. And, you know, but they tried to say it was at the time. And they only got caught by the FBI, basically, catching Timothy McVeigh by sheer good luck. and in the same way the FBI cracked the anthrax, and I've got no doubt that the FBI would have cracked 9/11 if they'd been given the chance, but unfortunately they were kept off it, you know, by a very carefully planned coup. And once again, you can follow that through. You know, they put this guy Chertoff in charge of the FBI's relevant sections 6 months before 9/11. He was a sort of classic neocon invade Iraq guy. But certainly since 1995, they were well aware that the future theatre of conflict was going to be the Middle East and Central Asia. And they've been planning, you know, they like to make out that wars come to them, you know, and they're always acting in self-defense. But they've been actually planning to extend into Central Asia and the Middle East for, you know, at least 15 years now.
It's almost 10 years now since 9/11. Do you think that next year the issue, as a decade has passed, will be raised back to the forefront of the news again and properly questioned, or do you think they'll just skip over it and maybe even use it just as another propaganda opportunity and kind of...
Definitely. They'll definitely use it as a propaganda opportunity. But I think, you know, I think the 9/11 truth movement and the generally skeptics and people abroad have really made it a lot more muted. I mean, the plan was to try and make it like the Holocaust. What they're hoping to do psychologically in people's minds is to identify 9/11 with the Holocaust. It's sort of like America's Holocaust. And then they were going to hope to get that really identity, you know, that America was possibly going to get attacked by nuclear weapons and millions killed. So there's a very, very powerful psychological game at work here. And that's been pretty badly damaged by the 9/11 truth movement, just laughing at them, really. So I think they'll be cautiously propagandist about it. And a few of the braver media will start asking questions, places like The Independent and maybe The Guardian, if we're really lucky. The Daily Mail is actually extremely sceptical about 9/11, but you wouldn't really know it as a Daily Mail reader. But I've read a book called 9/11, The New Evidence, which I still think is the best book on 9/11, as I would, I suppose. My first book, 9/11 Revealed, was given a huge splash in the Daily Mail. There is a lot of skepticism out there, but the editors, the people with the power who lay down the line, you know, when it comes to the big headlines, they've got pretty much total control, and I don't think they're going to admit anything this year or next year.
Indeed, I've stopped buying papers. I've totally boycotted them for quite a long time now.
Yeah,
I don't have any time for any of them.
Totally.
All right, you're listening to the Tony Legend Show here on Manchester Radio Online. I'm joined by Ian Henshaw from Reinvestigate 9/11. Moving on, Ian, just break down, if you can, some of the key points connected to 9/11 that you feel we need to have investigated most urgently.
Well, I'd like to know all about the anti-hijack exercise that Pentagon was running that morning. That is obviously the clue to, at the very least, that was a smokescreen that was created to, effectively aid and abet the operation. So we need to know everything about that, and we need to know the exact details of what was going in the CIA's, going on in the CIA's Osama bin Laden unit in the months prior to 9/11. Because, you know, I was saying this lie about how they had no warning and they couldn't have imagined it in the White House. Well, actually, we now know that the CIA had a super secret Osama bin Laden unit, which had 80 CIA officers in it at the time that 9/11 happened.
Abel Danger?
Abel Danger possibly linked to that as well. But we know nothing about what the CIA's Osama bin Laden unit was actually up to. And they refused to tell the 9/11 Commission. They just point-blank refused, although the 9/11 Commission never actually told us that clearly, but people who worked for it later have said that. It's interesting.
Speaking of the drills that were going on that morning, I've got a very short clip here. Just listen up to this. This is shows the confusion in air traffic control.
Jack aircraft headed towards New York.
Is this real world or exercise?
No, this is not an exercise, not a test.
That's a powerful little clip, that, but it's very short. But
that's
just shows
a real giveaway. Yeah. That was the first giveaway that they did have those exercises going that morning.
Yeah,
and later on in one of those transcripts, you've got a guy saying, "I don't believe this is real traffic." That's the plane that's about a minute away from hitting one of the Twin Towers. The guy's there on the record saying, I don't believe this is a leaked air traffic control. It would be very interesting to get the subsequent tapes, that the leaked tapes were doctored so as to not give away hardly any information. But what the guys said after later on in their discussions with each other would, of course, be very interesting as well. And we know that somebody did do some interviews with them and then destroyed all the tapes of the interviews. So there's whichever way you look at it, it's a huge stinking pile of garbage, basically, the official story, I'm afraid.
How do you think buildings expressly built to survive impacts from passenger jets would collapse so fast? And how do you think all that concrete and steel was pulverized?
I really don't know. I think it's one of the great mysteries. According to the official story, three different buildings were hit by two planes, and they all collapsed at almost free-fall speed. And the building that wasn't hit by a plane, its collapse was announced 20 minutes before it happened by the BBC and the other media. And they have now admitted that for a couple of seconds it was literally falling at free-fall speed. There was no resistance whatsoever from underneath to that falling building for 2 seconds. Now, you know, anybody who's scientifically literate hearing that for the first time will realize that they've got an awful lot to explain just on the basis of that bit of information alone. I think the most telling thing is the way the buildings collapsed completely symmetrically when they weren't hit symmetrically, the way they collapsed leaving the central cores completely collapsed, and those cores were welded. They were based on the structure. They were the load-bearing part of the structure. They were welded from top to bottom, not even bolts on them, and they all collapsed right down to the ground. And for each of the three building collapses, the official story has proposed a different mechanism of collapse. So, you know, those who are scientifically, you know, literate will, I think, recognize just from what I've said that there's an awful lot to be explained. And when you then find out that they haven't gone a tenth of the way to explaining it after 8 years of controversy, you just have to resort to the assumption that there were some sort of explosives or some sort of artificial extra factor that caused those collapses to happen in that way.
Indeed. I've got another little clip here. We'll play it quickly. It's just some eyewitness testimony of explosions in the buildings.
At 10:30, I tried to leave the building, but as soon as I got outside, I heard a second explosion and another rumble and more smoke and more dust. I ran inside the buildings. The chandelier shook, and again, black smoke filled the air. Within another 5 minutes, we were covered again with more silt and more dust. And then a fire marshal came in and said we had to leave because if there was a third explosion, this building might not last.
As we were getting our gear on and making our way to the stairway, there was a heavy-duty explosion.
Some of the people out, then there was those secondary explosions and then the subsequent collapses. So I don't know how many people were there. I know there was a lot of firefighters.
New York's bravest never had a chance.
We really never even got that close to the building. The explosion blew and it knocked everybody over.
The FBI is here, as you can see. They had roped this area off. They were taking photographs and securing this area just prior to that huge explosion that we all heard and felt.
Most of the victims so far were people outside the blown up buildings.
Like, it sounded like gunfire. You know, bang, 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 bang. And then all of a sudden, three big explosions.
To me, it sounded like an explosion, then the building, the rolling sound, sounded like the building collapsed.
The floors collapsed down.
All right, we've got about 5 minutes of those clips, so I'll just leave it there. But you get the gist there. There's plenty of evidence of controlled demolition or explosions, at least, going on in the buildings.
Well, the official story for the first few hours was hovering with admitting that the buildings had been brought down by explosives, and they were intending to blame it on Osama bin Laden. But then, you know, somebody must have realized that it was just not credible that Osama bin Laden could carry off something of that complexity and preparation that would be needed. So then, you know, you get the decision that there weren't any explosions, and they literally went round a lot of those firemen. And when you read the verbal histories, you've got lots of people saying things like, well, I thought there were explosions at the time, but later it was explained to me so and so and so, you know. And so you can clearly see that there was a very active move to persuade people that they hadn't heard explosions. it's pretty spooky, you know. I must say that I'm a pretty much of a lifelong cynic, but I never would have thought that they could have been so effective at manipulating the media and public opinion, you know, as they were in the days after 9/11.
And there's plenty of people behind the call for a new investigation, such as architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. Now, architects in the US are calling for a grand jury probe of the fraudulent World Trade Center reports from NIST. NIST refused to share its models and refused independent access to physical evidence and failed to investigate the traces of military nanothermites found in the dust at Ground Zero. Surely the architects and engineers, they know what they're talking about.
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, they people say, well, why aren't there more scientists speaking out? But that betrays an ignorance of how science works. The reason there aren't even more scientists speaking out than there are is because the evidence has all been seized. The computer models are secret. You know, it takes a brave professor on the other side of the world or even 100 miles away to say, well, you know, I think this happened, because science is all about evidence. And if they just seize all the evidence, then all you can say is, well, you know, we don't know. And if you ask most scientists who are familiar with some of the issues, that's pretty much what they'll tell you. But, you know, definitely should be a proper investigation, and definitely the investigation was fraudulent, that's true.
All right, now, finishing up, just before you go, obviously 9/11 has led us down a very bad path of wars and public intrusion, like intrusion into your private life and stuff like that. Where do you see us right now in the world in general, and kind of where we're headed as a planet?
Well, it's, you know, that's a pretty big question. I think that, you know, they will, hopefully there's enough competition between the various states and blocs that, you know, they won't be able to get away with anything like 9/11 again. It was a unique moment. You know, they had Russia on board because Russia also had its own problems with militants. And Putin had done something similar, apparently, with his buildings in Russia, you know, and justified it. So there was lots of reasons why 9/11, they could have got away with 9/11 then, but they wouldn't get away with another 9/11 now. I mean, they get away with it domestically, but, you know, not globally. And globally, things matter nowadays because, you know, even America and Europe added together can't really dominate the world in the way that they used to. And you've got Japan is now defecting to quite a large extent. Turkey, even Germany is much friendlier with Russia than they would like. So I think what you're seeing is a crumbling of Anglo-American power, but it's a pretty slow process. And, you know, the question is, what comes after it, really? But at the moment, I think we've got quite a good free market globally in information. I mean, I was on Russia Today, which is a very good English language TV channel. People are beginning to watch that here now, you know, because they don't trust the BBC any longer. And that's happening more and more, all that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think Russia Today is probably the best news channel that I get in this country.
Yeah, I wouldn't say particularly what. But, you know, definitely, I would say that. I would say that, certainly I was on it.
Now, all right, then, just before we go outside, maybe 9/11 itself, Obama promised a lot in the way of change and all that, but do you think now it's coming to prove that just he is another puppet and he kind of works for the same folks that Bush did? Otherwise, I mean, if you had a real guy in there who was really changed and really different to the establishment as it was with the Bush administration, surely he would investigate at 9/11.
Well, they have made some quite interesting comments, actually, just below the radar. But it will definitely have been noticed at the CIA and in Washington. They were very skeptical about the Christmas bomber. I don't think Obama is exactly the same crowd as Bush. I think he is part of the American establishment, however. And, you know, he could be just as bad as Bush. I'm not saying he isn't. But on the other hand, I wouldn't like to rush to judgment. I mean, let's remember, you know, it does take a year or two to turn a country round, to turn a regime round. For instance, you know, Gorbachev in the Soviet Union, it was a couple of years before everybody realized just how effectively he was turning things around there. And I can see a few moves on the horizon with Obama that I'm lead me to think that there is still some hope. Not that he's going to revolutionise the world. I mean, that obviously is a pipe dream. But that he might take them away, steer them away from the path of war, at least.
I'm afraid I have to say that I admire your optimism.
Well, it is optimism.
But I'm being as realistic as it can be. Barack Obama is sending drone attacks in Pakistan almost every day. He sent 30,000 more troops to Afghanistan. They're going through the old trickery route of calling the troops left in Iraq non-combat troops. But I mean, come on, when's a soldier a non-combat? I mean,
totally.
Come on.
I think
he's a soldier.
Might kick the rest of them out. I think I'm maybe call me an optimist, but I'm quite optimistic that once there aren't enough of them in there still to be able to realistically come back in a hurry, I think the Iraqis are just going to say bye bye and they're going to close down the bases. But I am an optimist.
Well, and just literally, this is the last point before you go. What about a thing I read last week that Tony Blair has been personally pocketing Iraqi oil money?
Oh, disgusting. But what else? I mean, the only question is, was exactly why was Tony Blair blackmailed and bribed? I mean, there's all sorts of ugly rumours going around about his sexual, you know, life, and that he was blackmailed through that. I think basically the answer is you don't get in there with, you know, money from the oligarchy, which Tony Blair did. And incidentally, David Cameron's the same. They've financed his private office in the same way that they financed Tony Blair's private office. In other words, not the party, but the private office. That's a sign of somebody who has no interest in the party, but just wants to get their man in charge of it. And, you know, but they, when they do that, when they put you forward like that, of course you're a puppet, and they need to make sure that you're going to stay a puppet. So, you know, I think they do it through blackmail mainly, potential blackmail. But they've certainly bribed him pretty much. Maybe he's just greedy for money.
Ian Henshaw, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We've just got one little last thing for you here on the MSN. It's from Ruth. She says, so what has changed since 9/11? More wars, more corruption, more lies. What can we do as people to confront our government and stop this terrorism by our government?
Well, I think what we can do, I mean, basically, don't listen to the government, but tell all your friends not to as well, and inform yourself accurately. I mean, that's the first step. But secondly, I mean, actually, during the election, there is an opportunity now to support candidates. Don't ever vote for Labour or Conservative unless you're trying to make sure there's a hung parliament. And you know, there's your vote. You know, it's more of a wasted vote for them than it is for a small party which isn't going to win, but which the more votes it gets, the more support it'll get, you know. So I'd say vote Green or Respect or just anybody that isn't Labour or Conservative. Lib Dem. Lib Dems aren't as bad.
I would just vote for independent candidates, me, but anyway.
Yeah, independents, for sure, definitely.
Ian Henshaw, thank you very much. Reinvestigate911.org is the website. Yep.
Thanks very much. Yes, that's right. Yeah.
All right, no worries. Sir, thank you very much for your time, and we appreciate you coming on the show tonight.
Thank you for having me.
All right, no worries. There he goes, folks. That was Ian Henshaw from reinvestigate911.org. All right, then, we're going to play a track now, and then I'm going to come back, hopefully, with Nick Dean, who's going to talk to us a little bit about chemtrails. It's one thing I noticed earlier on. Salford and Manchester was absolutely covered in chemtrails this afternoon, so we're just going to find out what is going on after this. This is Ian Brown. And this is an absolute monster tune. It's called Save Us. Turn this right up. You're listening to The Tony Legend Show, Manchester Radio Online. Manchester Radio Online. That was Ian Brown with Save Us. You're listening to The Tony Legend Show. All right, then. I'm joined on the line right now by our next guest tonight. He is Nick Dean, joining us for 5 or 10 minutes. Nick, how are you doing?
I'm all right, thanks, Tony.
All right, good to hear from you, sir. All right, then. Basically, we're going to keep this pretty quick, but for folks out there who don't know, have never heard the term chemtrail, what can you tell us about that? Basically, I'll sum it up for folks in a nutshell. If you've looked up at the sky and you've noticed plain contrails that just don't go away, that kind of linger there in the sky, that's what we're talking about. They're called chemtrails. And Nick, what can you tell us more about what you know about these?
Well, actually, it's a bit ironic, because as we speak now, if you look outside, I mean, I'm in the Staffordshire area, but I'm sure if you look outside your window now, you look towards the moon, you can see these lines going across the sky. Now, which is pretty unusual, really, because they generally come out sort of first thing in the morning, about 6 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning. Then sometimes they continue all day. And then what happens is you'll get these sort of lines eye up in the sky, and then they crisscross. You see these X's in the sky, circles, all sorts of things. And then the sort of material, what they pump in the sky, kind of spreads out, and it lasts for maybe 2, 3, 4 hours, or even all day in some cases.
Now, this is, I just want to hark back to something that was exposed quite a long time ago, but this is, I've got this from The Guardian in 2002, and for folks, if you think that it's far-fetched that the government was spraying stuff from the sky on you, listen to this. The Ministry of Defence turned large parts of the country into a giant laboratory to conduct a series of secret germ warfare tests on the public. A government report just released provides for the first time a comprehensive official history of Britain's biological weapons trials between 1940 and 1979. Many of these tests involved releasing potentially dangerous chemicals and microorganisms over vast swaths of the population without the public being told. While details of some secret trials have emerged in recent years, the 60-page report reveals new information about more than 100 covert experiments. Now, basically, that's what was confirmed, been going on from 1940 and 1979, quite a long time. Do you think that we are now seeing a new series of tests?
Definitely. But this time it seems to be on a vast scale, because them experiments were over certain areas. In the south of England, which I think there was some they admitted to during the 70s that went on. But this is literally on a worldwide scale, because, you know, from Facebook I'm getting people reports from, you know, all over the world, from Australia to America, France, and to the UK, which we are getting quite heavily bombarded at the moment. Now, one thing that concerns me with these chemicals is the chemicals that are in them. Two of the main ingredients are barium oxide and aluminium oxide. Now, according to a report I've got here, barium creates breathing difficulties, increased blood pressure, heart rhythm changes, stomach irritation, muscle weakness, alterations in nerve reflexes, damage to your brain, liver, kidney and heart. Now, in today's society, all them problems are there. The amount of people that are ill through, various things. And also, in the soil, I read a report on the soil, and apparently the levels of barium are 8 to 9 times higher than normal levels.
And barium weakens the immune system as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So, you know, when there's a virus about, what's that going to do for you?
Exactly, and especially off the back of a massive swine flu scam.
Well, exactly.
Spraying the public.
Quite a few of us were getting a bit worried last year because during the swine flu scam, there was quite a lot of chemtrails. Now, it seems to have died down, but in January, I flew from London to Manchester, and there was quite a heavy blanket of cloud, and we were above the cloud, but I noticed chemtrails above the cloud. So they are actually operating, when there's a lot of cloud cover. It just happens when we see a little bit of sun in the UK, then we see the chemtrails.
We've got a resident skeptic on a Skype, Ace, again. He says, aircraft have been dumping fuel over Manchester for years, especially around Manchester Airport. Most planes, when coming into land, dump any extra fuel they have for safety reasons.
I would say that's not true, because I've actually worked at Manchester Airport. So the only time an aircraft will dump fuel is if it's an emergency, if it needs to. That's certainly not true.
You can't have planes just dumping lots of...
No, they can't do that. And if they do, they generally do it over a lake or something.
But Ace, I'm actually going to send Ace on Skype right now. I'm going to send him a link, and you at home as well. If you're listening, obviously you're online, because we're not on the old FM, so you're listening online. Go now to chemtrailsuk.net. That's www.chemtrailsuk.net. And I'm signing that right now. There you go, Ace, that's sent to you, mate. And you can see the pictures of the chemtrails now. The pictures on that website, chemtrailsuk.net, are exactly the same as the chemtrail pictures I took on my phone. And I've took them in Salford maybe 3 or 4 times over the last 6 months to maybe just over, under a year anyway. But I've got loads of different pictures. Every time I see them, I go out and take photos. And I spoke to spoke to Nick earlier, and we've seen them today. They were out today.
They've been out all day today, and also they're currently out at the moment. But they don't usually spray at night, because I'm usually up early in the morning, so I'm up sort of before it comes light, and then I notice, you know, during the morning. It's happening probably 3 to 4 times a week in the, over the UK. Maybe even more. I mean, I remember last year when the BBC had predicted this barbecue summer. and I think most of it didn't happen because they were spraying out the skies. Because, I mean, all last year was just full of it.
Greg, here we've got someone else on MSN here. Greg says, I have been filming and photographing chemtrails for the last couple of months in Aberdeen. So there you go there. More proof that they're right up there in the top of Scotland.
Yeah,
and Greg,
it's absolutely worldwide. You know, chemtrails is going on worldwide. So what is happening? You know, what are they doing? Why are they spraying us?
Yeah, and he's just sent me some photos, and again, it's exactly the same as the photos that I've took on my phone from the last while here in Manchester. It's scary stuff, and this is a thing. I think we've kind of just touched on this for the first time on the show today, but I've been aware about this for a long time. Obviously, a lot of other people has as well, but I mean, it's getting to the point now where I can look out my window of my living room and see them. Before, it was just something, yeah, they said that it was spraying in Los Angeles and spraying in all over states of America, but when it's coming to Salford, that's when I start to get a bit cross, folks. And so we're going to maybe get into this a bit more over the coming weeks and really dig into this and try and find out what is going on. And obviously, I mean, there's been some of those, you know, Downing Street, what are they called, petitions. And I've seen them with like 15,000 votes or signatures and whatnot on there. So there is a lot of people that is aware of this and a lot of people are trying to take action. But, I mean, it's like talking to a brick wall.
It is at the moment. I mean, you know, you're discussing 911 and 77. I mean, we all kind of know what went on, you know, with these. And anybody who believes the official conspiracy theory, you know, really needs to do some research. But the thing is, with those happened then. Although they are very important, because if they were unravelled, maybe everything else, what's going on, could be unravelled. But chemtrails is happening here, and it's happening right above now. So there's definitely something going on.
It's directly affecting you. If you're working outside a lot and they're spraying stuff that has got barium, I mean, studio, what's it, Royston Radio, big up to yourself there on the MSN. He says, it's Jamie from Glasgow, he says, the guy you're talking to is spot on about barium. It damages the brain. So, folks, you're actually being brain damaged.
I mean, one of the major things with it, what they reckon is that it's making people docile. Which I strongly believe.
Yeah.
You know, you've got TV bombarding you one way with this rubbish, and then you've got this coming through the sky.
And then you've got
aspects of it. What really, you know, annoys me, because like I say, I'm working out in it all day, and there's many days I come home, my throat is burning and my eyes are burning as well.
Well, we really appreciate you joining us tonight, and we will have you again maybe on in the coming weeks to talk about this, and we'll maybe get into it in a bit more detail in the next next week or two, all right?
Okay, it's a pleasure.
No worries. Nick, thank you very much.
Thank you.
There you go, folks. That's Nick Dean, who's talking to us about chemtrails. All right, then. We're going to get got our next guest coming up in about 5 minutes' time. He is his name's Andrew Johnson, and he's been involved in a lot of high-profile campaigns, court cases concerning 9/11. I'm going to give him a ring in a moment. If you want to get in touch with us here in the studio, please MSN your questions, studio@manchesterradioonline.com. I really want to hear from you, and thanks to everyone. There's loads of you getting in touch tonight, and lots of great comments and pictures and stuff being sent, so I'm really happy with the show tonight. Hope you're enjoying listening to it at home. It's 9:05, it is Sunday night, this is the Tony Legend Show. We're going to go with a bit of Tupac right now. Turn this up. I ain't never just tripped and pitch it. Just looked at the whole situation, cause one thing before Manchester Radio Online, that's Tupac. Alright then, our next caller on the phone tonight is Andrew Johnson. Andrew, welcome to the Tony Legend Show.
Hi, thank you very much for inviting me on.
No problem, sir, it's a pleasure to have you here. Now, for folks who don't know anything about you, just please explain to us all about who you are, what you do, and why I've brought you on the show tonight.
Okay, I'll try. I'm basically just an ordinary guy, really, because I currently work part-time for the Open University, tutoring on a computer course, and I also do disabled students' assessments for them. My background is actually, though, in software engineering, which is basically computer programming with a bit of sort of design and that sort of activity. I've been involved in sort of re-engineering bits of software and, you know, building various sort of software systems or parts thereof, integrating them with others. But that sort of work has faded off for me over the last few years. I kind of got into doing this sort of research in about 2003 when I, you know, the broadband revolution sort of started and I got a broadband connection and started going on the internet for loads of things, and I found out about various things like the Disclosure Project, and then I started finding out about 9/11, and really it was by 2004 that I was pretty sure that the official story of 9/11 was, you know, was a pack of lies. And at that point I started writing a few letters, you know, in that sort of area. I wrote to my MP, and I wrote to a couple of other people who'd expressed an interest in 9/11. And then really what happened was by 2005, there'd been a UK forum that had been set up, an internet forum, you know, to post messages, and there were a few meetings down in London that I sort of went to, and that's where the main group of people were. And then after the, let's see, after that, I suppose the next development was in late 2005, and that was when this Scholars for 9/11 Truth group began to sort of come into being. And because I was associated with the Open University, albeit in a very sort of lowly capacity, academically speaking, I was invited to join this group by this character called Dr. Stephen A. Jones. And I assumed that what he'd done is he'd been reading some of my postings on the forum that I'd posted, which was a physics forum, because my degree was in computer science and physics. So I've got, you know, reasonable background in sort of physics, and my particular interest was how the towers were destroyed at that time. And I think it's one of the things which came up in your discussion with Ian Henshaw, the very strange freefall or apparent freefall nature of the destruction of the towers. And I actually posted some short equations about that, because it's to do with the laws of motion, and you can actually work out the time of freefall basically. It's to do with the sort of acceleration due to gravity, which is root 2g over h is how you work out the time of collapse. And I basically posted that on a forum, and I think this Stephen E. Jones character must have found that, or somebody must have sent him a link. And they invited me to be a full member of this group, Scholars for 9/11 Truths. And then they started to do things like issue press releases, and Stephen E. Jones had published this paper about this supposed presence of thermite in the buildings, and that's really how I you know, got, started to get heavily into it. I mean, you know, I don't know where you want to go from there, but
well, I was going to talk about some of the court cases and things you've been involved with.
Can you just repeat that? I'm having a bit of trouble hearing you.
Yeah, sorry. I think something funny going on with the phone line. It says, I was just going to say, you've been involved with some court cases and stuff about 9/11.
Yes, that's right. Well, that was kind of about, I suppose, let's see, we're talking about 18 months after the, probably initial, well, yeah, 15 months after the Scholars Group introduction. Now, you mentioned in the introduction, I think, that these were high-profile cases. Well, actually, I'd probably question that description, because nobody wants to talk about these court cases, and in fact, as listeners will probably be aware now, Ian Henshaw didn't even mention them, even though I'd made him aware of these court cases several times, and we did discuss them, but he never mentioned them, which is very strange to me, because the court cases, I was actually involved in two of them, one more than the other. I mentioned the first one and what happened to it. Dr. Morgan Reynolds, who was the chief economist in the Department of Labour in George Bush's 2000 administration for 16 months, in other words, he left his office after 16 months, he came to the conclusion, and, you know, before I go into details on this, I better make a sort of brief statement in that if we go into detail on this tonight, we're going to cover a lot of things which people are going to find actually very difficult to believe, and they're going to really need to check this out for themselves properly and spend probably a couple of hours doing it, because, quite frankly, if you start getting emails like we've been getting about this, you know, you're really going to get attacked for sort of discussing these issues or having this discussion on your program, because that's what we've experienced. But, you know, so I'll put that as a sort of an initial point to warn people that we're going to get into some very difficult areas, and they're really going to lift the 9/11 story completely out of what I would call a political paradigm. I noticed that Ian was mainly focusing on sort of political points. And really, what you've got to do with 9/11 first is you've got to actually establish what actually happened. Now, you know, for example, just to give you one detail before we go into the Morgan Reynolds court case, Ian Henschel talked of the buildings, the World Trade Center towers collapsing. Well, did they actually collapse? If you actually go and look at the videos, you didn't see them collapse. You saw them turn to dust, and that included all of the steel. Now, we can understand that if a bomb goes off in the towers, you know, that might turn some of the concrete into powder. But the problem is that bombs don't turn steel to dust. And you can go and look at this. I've got a video which I've made, and you can go and see all these videos on my website, which is checktheevidence.com. And there's another video. If you go to tinyurl.com/911key, that's tinyurl.com/911key, you will see a 20-minute video I made, which includes the evidence. We'll now go back to the Morgan Reynolds case, because what he was making the legal prosecution over, or legal case over, was for science fraud. He put together the evidence in his case that plane crash at the World Trade Center, the plane crashes at the World Trade Center didn't happen the way that we were told. The basic idea behind this is that if you actually go and watch the videos of the planes hitting the towers and you study them for, say, a few minutes and look at them, and we presented this on Edge Media TV quite recently, myself and Dr. Judy Wood with Theo Chalmers, and you can go and watch all this on the YouTube. If you look at the plane actually crashing into the tower, you can see some problems with the video and what actually happens. Because if you think of a Formula One car crashing into a barrier, you know, sort of 150 miles an hour, you see that it doesn't just go into the rubber tyres and sort of get absorbed by the rubber tyres or whatever. It will actually bounce off at an angle and spin round. And if the plane, which was coming into one of the towers, was turning and banking round and then coming straight on, unless it was absolutely straight on, you know, the tail would spin round and break off and fall down into the street. But actually what you saw in the video was the building absorb the plane. This is physically impossible. Now, again, a lot of people are going to think, oh, what's this Andrew guy on about? You know, he's just talking a load of rubbish. I can't deal with this, and switch off. But if you actually go and watch the videos, you'll see that this is true. And so basically that's the basic premise behind Morgan Reynolds' court case, that he said that NIST, by employing people to produce computer animations about how the plane crumpled off and got absorbed in the building and sliced through the steel girders, which you can't, it's physically impossible, because if you have two materials, if you have aluminium wing struts, which are a quarter of an inch thickness, there's no way that an aluminium wing strut can cut through a three-inch steel girder, which is what the World Trade Center was made of. But if you go and look at the pictures, you will see that that appears to have what happened. And, you know, people say, oh, well, it was going in so fast. Well, I'm sorry, but the maximum speed of a Boeing traveling at 700 feet is roughly 300 miles an hour, when the official NIST report said that it was traveling at either 500 or 540. So that is also impossible. I'll give you another little example. If you fire a 44 Magnum bullet at a steel girder, which is denser and flying faster than a Boeing, what will it do to the steel girder? Will it go through it? It won't. It will ricochet off it. So these are very basic things, and which is why it's very important for you to go back and look at what actually happened before you go off and say, oh, well, it can't have been Bin Laden, and we've got all this CIA, you know, apparatus doing all these things, and we know, you know, that the troops are ready to go into Afghanistan and all these things. That's all a separate part of the story, and not that it's unimportant to investigate it. If you want the truth of 9/11, you actually have to look at what happened. And the best place to deduce what happened is at the World Trade Center, because we've got the most evidence. Morgan Reynolds' case was taken forwards after a request for correction to NIST was sent in, which is a submission made under the Data Quality Act. I realize I'm covering a lot of ground here in a short time. But basically, he challenged NIST to correct their reports and said, you know, if you're not going to correct your reports, then you are going to be sued for science fraud. And NIST, he didn't actually sue NIST, I should make that clear, he sued their contractors. In other words, NIST employed a number of companies to write the reports. They spent, I think it was either $13 million or $16 million producing 10,000 pages of reports, which was supposedly the official inquiry into the destruction of the World Trade Center. We later got a letter from NIST in relation to the other court case, which is Dr. Judy Wood's court case, which was also science fraud, we got a letter from NIST, or she got a letter from NIST, I should say, which I, you know, I think is posted on her website, saying they did not investigate the collapse. So NIST's report, which is entitled The Collapse of the World Trade Center Towers, is fraud on its face, because in the letter that we got from NIST in response to the request for correction, they said, we did not investigate the collapse. We only investigated events up to the point of collapse. So something is wrong with this picture, very seriously wrong with this picture. So Dr. Judy Wood then proceeded with her own fraud case. Morgan Mennell's court case was basically dismissed. It was submitted to the court of the Southern District of New York, and then it was dismissed. And all these documents are posted on Dr. Judy Wood's website, so if you want to go and validate them and, you know, see that they're actually real and they're really, really worthwhile documents, you can go and validate all that for yourself. So Morgan Mennell's decided at that point not to pursue his case when it was dismissed. The judge's dismissal document is very, very interesting to read, because in the dismissal, the ruling mentions the JFK assassination and the moon landings, which, of course, has absolutely nothing to do with the evidence at the World Trade Center. Now, you know, you can expect this sort of chit-chat in an internet forum posting and, you know, everyone being accused of a conspiracy theory and blah, blah, blah. But in a court ruling, I think it's very interesting to read that sort of statement. So I then was also involved with Dr. Judy Wood's court case, and what I ended up doing, as well as helping to prepare some documents for both these cases, I just did some, like, formatting of tables, and I collected some information from the NIST reports, did a few keyword searches and this sort of thing, you know, just sort of helping out a bit. But with Dr. Wood's case, I actually submitted my own affidavit as part of that set of documents, because I visited New York City in January 2008, and we walked around the Ground Zero site, and we looked at what was going on, and we filmed them hosing down the site. I took a film of that, and we looked at some of the rusting beams which are still there, which is part of the real story of 9/11, or real story that happened at the World Trade Center. And in relation to that, I submitted an affidavit in support of the evidence that Dr. Judy Wood was submitting for her court case. So I'd just like to hesitate at this point and say what we're dealing with is evidence, and if you are submitting something to court, you don't submit a conspiracy theory, you don't submit a theory, you're submitting something that you think can win the case, because we certainly don't have the money to spend on such things. I've spent probably, on the court case alone, I've probably spent about £700 or £800 of my own money. You know, that's to go towards copying of documents that need to be submitted to judges and that sort of thing. So I helped out with a bit of money. I think Dr. Wood has spent considerably more, and her attorney, Jerry Leaphart, he basically, I think, gave his time for free for much of this case, and just charged for some of the expenses for the document reproduction and that sort of thing. So I became quite heavily involved in this, and, you know, if people want to read about Dr. Wood's court case and what it contains, which is to do with the destruction of the buildings, you know, they can do that on her website. But what we must point out is that we mentioned the group, or you mentioned the group, Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. They haven't submitted a court case. That group tends to talk a lot about thermite. They tend to talk a lot about molten metal in the basements of the buildings. They tend to talk a lot about bombs in the buildings, which came up in your discussion with Ian Henshaw. But the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth group, they also submitted an RFC, which was the initial stage before the legal case. They submitted an RFC 3 weeks after Dr. Judy Wood did, in April 2007. But if you go and read that document, which is available on this website, or on their own, or on the Journal of 9/11 Studies, or one of those, or Scholars for 9/11 Truth and Justice website, if you go and read that document, you'll find that the word thermite is not mentioned, and neither is the word molten metal. So the evidence that they go around and talk about in public, which they say proves that it was bombed in the building, they didn't choose to submit that evidence in their request for correction to NIST, and they didn't proceed with a QI-TAM case for science fraud as Dr. Wood did. So there's something wrong with this picture. So we do have, we have had a legal case for 9/11 evidence has been submitted. Dr. Wood's case was dismissed actually with the same document as Morgan Reynolds' case was. It was basically the same document, as I recall, just with the name changed on the front. Even though the two cases were based on different evidence, the document for dismissal was identical, apart from the names, which was very strange. Dr. Wood then proceeded to make an appeal. She submitted her court case to the appeal courts, Second Circuit, and they had an oral hearing on the 23rd of June 2009, which I wrote press releases about. I sent these press releases out to all the mainstream media. No one covered it. I even posted some of these press releases on some of the 9/11 forums, and they were attacked when they were posted on the 9/11 forums. We've got some problems in the alternative media as well. People like Alex Jones, they've never covered these court cases, to my knowledge. I'm pretty safe in saying that they've never covered it. We're presented with a few problems here as to why these things haven't been covered. Where do you want me to go with this?
I was just going to let you work away with the info on the court cases, and then I wanted to kind of lead into how the BBC have reacted. I mean, I've got all the emails here that you exchanged with Mike Rudin from the BBC.
Oh, yes, thank you for reminding me about that. It was very, very interesting, yes. What happened in relation to that was Dr. Wood, she gets a lot of very funny emails, and we haven't really gone into why yet, but hopefully we'll get a chance to come to that. She was contacted by somebody called Mike Rudin from the BBC, and he was saying, can I have a quick chat with you about this documentary we're making? And at that time it was the team that was making the documentary called The Third Tower, which was about building number 7. And this has been subsequently repeated on BBC. I think it aired in June or July 2009 and she was contacted to partake in that. And she was a bit wary about what was involved because of previous experiences we've had with trying to basically reveal this information and being then attacked for it or misrepresented or misquoted, which I've written a whole book about actually. It's called 9/11 Finding the Truth, and you can download it for free from my website, or you can buy a copy at cost price. It's a print on demand, so you just pay for the actual book. I don't get any money from it at all. You can read all these emails and all this in that book and everything behind it. So she was contacted by Mike Rudin, and she sent the email to me because we've sort of shared a lot of information, and we've tried to sort of help each other out in terms of dealing with some of the weirdness that we've been dealing with. So I said to Mike Rudin, look, you made a documentary last year which was about the 9/11 truth movement essentially, and you misrepresented it. And you went to Popular Mechanics, and you said that Popular Mechanics was, a reputable academic source of information, and et cetera, et cetera. And I accused him. I said to him, look, Mr. Rudin, we both know that the war on terror is fake. So what I'd like you to do is, we've got this court case, which is filed in the Southern District of New York, and here's all the documents, and I sent him the link to all the PDF files that you can download to prove that it's real. I says, I'd like you to prove to me your sincerity by getting these court cases reported on BBC News bulletins, please, if you would, for a period of 24 hours. And I wanted just to say, two US professors have filed legal challenges to NIST in the United States. These are two reputable professors. One worked for George Bush's administration, so, he's a reputable guy. I know some people are going to say that's not the case, because of association with Bush, but, you can go and check him out for yourself, Dr. Morgan Reynolds. And so please report this honestly and accurately. He basically wrote back to me and said, well, I can't really do that. You can read his exact wording. Curiously, he didn't respond to me when I said, we both know the war on terror is fake. He didn't say, oh, what do you mean the war on terror is fake? Of course it's not fake. We know that it's real. We know that Al-Qaeda did it. He didn't say any of that, which I found very curious. In other words, it's one of these messages where it's very interesting for what was not said, just as much as for what was said. And he was very insistent about trying to get an interview with Dr. Wood as well. He didn't really seem to care what I said to him and the point I was trying to make, that he'd misrepresented the truth, and that gave me a huge problem. Even when I'd explained that to him and said, look, I basically said, I don't trust you. I really don't trust you in this matter. He still wanted to get this interview.
Can I just read out this email here now? I've got it in front of me. What you wrote to Mr. Rudin.
Yeah.
It says, I am responding on behalf of Dr. Wood, who I have been working closely with for some time. Why are you contacting Dr. Wood at this time? At the end of this message, I have enclosed an email I sent to you last year. If you reread this, you will begin to understand why I have advised Dr. Wood not to give you an interview. I do not trust you. You had an opportunity last year to display to the British public the truth about 9/11. Instead, you and your organisation made a documentary which portrayed Popular Mechanics as some kind of academic authority. You put out false information. You painted people like myself who are trying to get to the truth as some kind of conspiracy theorist. You employed a silky voice narrator so that the people wouldn't bother to check the facts and would swallow the morsels of disinformation without question. What I wrote last year is now as true as ever. Or maybe I am wrong. Perhaps you can produce some evidence that things are different this time. How about you arrange for Radio 2 news bulletins for a period of 24 hours to post an item in a respectful manner about the fact that Dr. Judy Wood and Dr. Morgan Reynolds have sued NIST for fraud over their NC Star reports? And it continues, but that's the kind of gist of the letter. We've got lots of emails between you and Mike Rudin. Very interesting correspondence there.
Well, exactly. I think my memory served me reasonably well in what you read out that corresponded with what I remember without reading it back verbatim. Yeah, so, you know, I basically gave him a chance. I said, you know, have you straightened up your act yet, you know, or is it still the same old story? Because if it was going to be the same old story, there clearly wasn't any point in us, you know, taking part in the effort. And, when the documentary aired, I think we made the right decision and we made the right call on that because it was a hit piece through and through.
And there's been a lot of the BBC's conspiracy files. Every one of them was a hit piece.
Yeah.
From 7/7 down.
Yeah.
What does that say about the BBC and where its loyalties lie to finding the truth?
Well, exactly. And I think really what we're looking at is this global group that's running everything and it's got its fingers everywhere. You know, it's unbelievable. Really, what we should do is, you know, look at why I got involved in this and why we've had so many problems in exposing this. You'll notice that Ian Henshaw has mentioned nothing about this in his discussion. Now, just going back to what he was talking about a little bit before, I want to bring to the attention of your listeners some of the evidence that they need to look at really to find the truth. Ian was talking about forming a, you know, parliamentary committee and all this sort of thing. Now, at one level, you know, as I mentioned to you in the email I wrote to you, I applaud that sort of effort, and I think in principle it's a good idea. But I think it's worth mentioning that we did try to get the interest of MPs starting in 2005. And in 2006, I emailed 500 MPs, I think it was about 500, with a letter which was composed by several of us campaigners, a chap called Ian Neal, who again doesn't really want to address this issue of the legal cases, Annie Machon and another chap called Justin Walker. And we emailed this letter around to MPs. And actually, in October 2006, I actually had a private meeting with Michael Meacher MP, and there was Justin Walker and Annie Machon in that meeting with me. And I presented him with a 200-page document, which was basically a summary of all the activities we'd undertaken in relation to trying to get the truth about 9/11, you know, brought out to the public. And there was, you know, none of them responded. There was no response to any of that. They weren't interested. Another person I know, they sent colour brochures of the things like the hole in the Pentagon and all this type of thing. This was before the days when I realised what Dr. Wood had found out. So that was all emailed. So we've been round all the MPs multiple times over since about 2005, and nothing has happened. There's been no new investigation. Except, you know, the only real investigation that's been done by a qualified scientist is Dr. Judy Wood's investigation, which is completely independent. She's paid for it herself. All the results are available public scrutiny. They're all on her website. You can download all the documents. You can download the submissions to NIST and everything. It's all available. And it's even on NIST's website as well. The documents that she submitted are on NIST's website. The court documents are all there. So all these documents, it's completely transparent, completely open, publicly investigation done by Dr. Judy Wood, who is a former professor of mechanical engineering with a specialist in materials science. So, you know, all those criteria to me are met. and yet we find that in the 9/11 Truth website, this thing is shunned, it's covered up, it's called, they say that Judy Wood is a crackpot, on and on and on. I've been at this now for 3 years with this investigation, essentially, this legally based one. The RFC was actually filed, I think, on the 16th of March 2007, and that's now, you know, just over 3 years ago. So, what is the problem here? Why are we getting all these problems? Why has nobody heard of this? I would almost guarantee that there'd be probably half your listeners or more who've talked about 9/11, they've heard about this thermite stuff. They probably won't have heard of anything that I'm telling them about.
We've got a message there on MSN from Jamie in Glasgow. He says, have you got a press statement? He wants to know if there's a press statement.
I'm having real trouble hearing you, so I'm sorry if you've tried to cut into
you me. Heard me right there. He says, Tony, can you ask Andrew, is there a press statement?
A press statement, did you say?
Yeah. So I presume that's a press release, he means. So.
Yeah. I sent you in the email. We've done, in the last 3 years, I've done, I think, 4 or 5 press releases when we've had significant developments. These are all posted on my website, checktheevidence.com. And if you, probably you could Google for them. If you put in Morgan Reynolds, Judy Wood, press release into Google, put all those keywords in 9/11 maybe, you'll probably be able to get those up. The actual final result has been that Dr. Judy Wood's court case was filed with the Supreme Court, in December, last year, December 2009. But in January this year, I think it was January the 14th or something, I can't remember the exact date, the Supreme Court refused the petition. They refused to hear the case. So, you know, we can't take that case any further with the, you know, that particular set of, the way the case is sort of set up at the moment. Somebody else would have to do something similar. Which, of course, is another thing. You know, if people want to find out about taking some legal action over 9/11 in the USA, then they should be looking at this court case. In other words, what did we do wrong? What could be done better? What could be improved on? Et cetera, et cetera.
Obviously, 9/11, there's so much of the story, and that's so well known. It's all around the world. People are well aware of all the different controversies. But 7/7 is much closer to home. What do you make of 7/7 and the so-called investigation into that?
Well, 7/7, I mean, I haven't done as much investigation into that because, you know, I only have a limited budget of time, but my understanding of 7/7, looking at some of the key evidence for that, I'd like to go back and talk about 9/11 evidence because I think that's more important, really, because of what the implications are on a global scale. But with 7/7, when you've got people like Peter Power saying they're involved in exercises, and when you've got witnesses at Edgware Road saying that, you know, the tiles on the floor of the train flew up and rose up in an explosion, and that was Mark Honigsbaum's story, and then he doesn't really investigate that angle. And then when you've got the train that the bombers are supposed to have caught from Luton was cancelled, I think the 740 or something, and then we've got a letter from the train manager, you know, saying that train was cancelled. They couldn't have got there in time to do the bombings.
Yeah.
You know, and the issue of the bus stopping in Tavistock Square, you know, and the Tavistock thing, and, you know, on and on.
It's very similar, isn't it, in that there's so many different facets to it, and so much controversy, and the bottom line of each, both 9/11 and 7/7, is what you've been told by the media and the politicians is lies.
Exactly, exactly. But the thing with 9/11 I've now discovered, and this really only started to happen in late 2006, early 2007, is we're now linking together the 9/11 cover-up and the energy cover-up, which I'd like to go through the evidence for. And to do this, you really have to, again, go back to what actually happened. You know, forget about Al-Qaeda, forget about, you know, all the CIA contacts and the, you know, Zionist angle and all that type of thing. Just forget all that for a moment and go and look at what actually happened. The key point of evidence is the World Trade Center towers turning to dust. In other words, we have this little sequence of 70 stories of unsupported steel turning to dust. So what can turn steel to dust? Fine dust, not chunks. The only thing that can turn steel to dust that I know of is a file. In other words, you know, you scrape a piece of steel with a file and little grains will come off it. If you put a bomb against steel, it will cut it into sections and chunks will go flying. That's not what we saw when the towers came down. And in fact, if you look at the seismic signature for the towers, which you can find on the US Geological Survey website, they didn't even hit the ground. I think the seismic signature was about 2.6 or something. They didn't even hit the ground. So how is it possible that those buildings didn't hit the ground? Well, it's possible because they were turned to dust in midair. In other words, as they came down, they were turning to dust as they came down. So then you're looking at, really, to answer that question. That question must be answered. In other words, any official inquiry or otherwise into 9/11 has to answer why the buildings did not hit the ground. And before you can even go to that point, you have to go and check for yourself that what I'm telling you is true. You have to go and look at that evidence again, re-examine it, check that what I'm telling you is true. And that's what I had to do about 3.5 years ago. So then you move forward and you're looking basically at technology. You're looking at some technology which did this. And Dr. Judy Woodard was saying in 2006 that she had looked at, about 10,000 pictures approximately, say, of the destruction of the World Trade Center from, you know, the actual day itself and from maybe the few weeks afterwards. What actually caused the destruction? If you go onto her website, www.drjudywood.com, go and look through the pictures yourself. You can go to the /WTC page and look at the summary there. Look at the points of evidence to be explained scientifically. And Dr. Wood, basically, she's ended up doing that. She started off realizing that we were seeing energy effects in the destruction of the data in the buildings, and that was all seen in the data. We'd had circular holes in the tops of the building, 24 feet in diameter. We were seeing holes in the pavement of the same width. And then we were seeing what appeared to be interference effects. Other pictures that she had showed cars that were burning next to paper that wasn't burning. And we all remember the unburned paper which blew through the street. So if people want to say there were bombs in the building or it was burned down with thermite, how can thermite burn all the steel and turn it to dust but not burn the paper? So you come up with a number of anomalous effects. We find inverted cars. We find accounts of witnesses being levitated. We hear accounts, sure, of explosions, but hardly any of them say they saw bombs actually exploding with hot flames coming out of the bombs. And we think that the explosive sounds were actually exploding tanks, such as fire extinguishers. And we even have, in the 500 witness reports, which I downloaded from the New York Times website, the oral histories, as Ian Henschel referred to them as, you can download all of those from my website, 500 of them. And you can find accounts of oxygen tanks on the fire trucks exploding. You can read the account of Patricia Ondrovich as she's walking down the street near the World Trade Center. The cars are exploding as she's walking past them. So how can cars be exploding as she's walking past them? So, again, I'm probably talking about lots of things that people have never heard of before. I've never heard of this. You know, what's going on with this? And again, all of these things that we're seeing end up being consistent with energy effects. Directed energy weapons is what we're talking about here.
So this is like a brand new weapon?
It's essentially, yeah, it's the first public showing of this weapon. Or is it? Or is it? Because, again, you can go and look at the Alfred P. Murrah building. Dr. Judy Wood's got this on her website. If you go drjudywood.com and then put slash and then the hash sign, you know, the number sign, little grid, history, that'll take you down the page a bit and you'll see a picture of the Alfred P. Murrah building and the Oklahoma bombing next to World Trade Center Building 6, and you'll have trouble telling those things apart. So we're looking at energy weapon technology, and I would point out here that if you go and look at the court case documents for Dr. Judy Wood, and you look at who the contractors were for the NIST reports, some of them, I think there are about 22 altogether, which she sued for willful blindness in not realizing the buildings were turning to dust. Three of those companies, and I'll name them, Science Applications International Corporation, these were three of the defendants, Applied Research Associates, and Boeing. Those three companies are all manufacturers of or researchers into directed energy weapons. And you can go and look on their websites to verify that, to check that I'm not making that up, which of course I'm not. So we've got some very curious conflicts of interest here, and NIST were advised about these conflicts of interest, and of course they denied them. So then we look at things like upside-down cars, going back to the evidence, We look at things like the Bankers Trust building, which was damaged in the destruction of the World Trade Center, and then they repaired that building, and now they're taking it down again at a cost of $70 million piece by piece. Why repair a building and take it down? Well, they said it had got a mold infection. On and on, we've got all these effects, weird fires, on and on. You have to go and check these for yourself. But what Dr. Wood ended up making the connection to, and this happened in November 2007, was something called the Hutchison effect. The Hutchison effect. Now, I'd already heard of the Hutchison effect myself, actually, in about 1999. And this was something that was discovered by a Canadian researcher called John Hutchison. And he was experimenting to reproduce the research of Nikola Tesla, who did a lot of experiments with electricity and various sort of oscillating frequencies. Nikola Tesla actually designed the original alternating current system that we now use to distribute electricity in the grid and etc. But that wasn't what John Hutchison was experimenting with. He was looking at field effects, field effect technology, interference of electric and magnetic fields, and he sometimes used a radioactive source as well. And with this equipment, over a period of about 10 or 12 years, as he refined his techniques, he was able to make metal bend. He was able to make it turn to jelly. He was able to make some metal turn into small particles of dust. And he was able to make things levitate and fly up and, you know, away from the experimental area. John Hutchison was visited by Colonel John Alexander, who's at one time head of the non-lethal weapons program based at Los Alamos National Laboratories. He was visited by John Alexander in 1983, and we have the documents to prove this, and I've got those on my website and also on John Hutchison's website, which is thehutchisoneffect.com. So we're now seeing the connection to Los Alamos National Laboratories, and the other person, of course, that's connected to Los Alamos National Laboratories is Professor Stephen E. Jones, the same one who produced the Thermite paper in 2005. And another energy connection here that we see with Dr. Stephen E. Jones, which people can go and check out, is that he was also responsible for publishing a paper in 1989 on something called neuon-catalyzed cold fusion. Cold fusion is was a process which was discovered by two chemists, Pons and Fleischmann, in 1989. They went public. Stephen E. Jones published his paper the day before Pons and Fleischmann. Pons and Fleischmann were basically saying, look, we've got this process and we think we can get five times out the amount of energy out of the experiment than we put in. Stephen E. Jones came along and basically he said, well, cold fusion is real, but you'll never get any useful energy out of it. So we've got that connection to Stephen E. Jones, and there are some more connections there which I could, you know, spend time sort of bringing out, but probably haven't got time on this broadcast. But if you investigate this evidence, you will see this energy connection running through 9/11 very strongly, and you will see in the evidence of the World Trade Center some very, very anomalous effects which need to be explained. And I, you know, I'm now convinced, and that's why I spent the money on it, and why I've put my own affidavit into this court case, as John Hutchison did, that this is the explanation for the destruction of the World Trade Center, which lifts us out onto a whole new area. Who's got the weaponry, who sanctioned its use, and, you know, what else can this technology do? When you look at that, you then realise that this is part of the global energy cover-up, this whole thing, as well.
Well, we could branch out into all different kind of things here to talk about. One thing I do want to mention before you go is the chemtrails, because that's a totally separate subject, but we just had a guy on before you talking about chemtrails. But I was going to say about earthquake weapons and HARP. Do you think, is that kind of tying into what you're saying there with HARP technology? Because I know that's linked to Nikola Tesla.
There has now been an attempt to implicate HARP in 9/11. I've written about this in my book, and this is by a character called Alfred Weber, who recently accused me of libel, and you can go and read his email to me on the website. Actually, it's not an email. He didn't send it by email, but that's, you can read that on the website. It's very strange. I don't think, except myself, HARP was directly involved in the events of 9/11. We don't have any evidence to prove that. We do have evidence to implicate what's called the Hutchison effect, as I say, and if you go and watch these videos that I've made and look at the articles, you will see all that laid out for you to look at. Chemtrails, yes, I've written about that. I've got a whole section on my website about chemtrails. I'm actually doing a bit of an investigation into that, and I have been. I know it sounds like I'm a bit of a jack-of-all-trades, but if you go to the website, you'll see it all laid out. But yeah, maybe there is a connection to 9/11, possibly, I don't know, but the thing that I do need to bring in relation to chemtrails and 9/11, is the idea of weather control, because again, this is something that you can easily verify, yet no one will bring up, and this is the presence of Hurricane Erin on the morning of 9/11, right? So Hurricane Erin was started off around the 1st of September. It was a tropical storm when it hit Bermuda on the 7th of September 2001. It then was reported by CNN hitting Bermuda, did a bit of damage, and then it went in a straight line out to sea in the direction of New York City. At 8 o'clock in the morning, it was about 500 miles away from New York City, out in the Atlantic, but at that point, at 8 o'clock in the morning, it was the closest to New York City, and it was at its largest extent in terms of its coverage of area. The next day, on the 12th of September, it made a right-hand turn and went out towards Newfoundland. And you can go and look at the path, you can download it from the Hurricane Data Centre or even from the UK Met Office. They've got it in their archives because I found a map of it. So you can easily verify that this is what actually happened. And we think that, bizarre though it sounds, this is why I'm talking about it being lifted onto a whole new level, that the hurricane did actually play a role in the energy system which was used to destroy the towers. We're not sure exactly what that was. I'm not sure exactly what that was. But for it to be closest to New York City at 8 o'clock in the morning on 9/11, you can dismiss that as a coincidence if you want. I certainly can't, looking at the other weather data that Dr. Wood had put on her website. You can find all this. She's got all the weather data on there. Dry thunder being reported at all three New York airports on 9/11, which indicates that the effects of the storm, the field effects, were being felt in New York City, all around New York City. So people should investigate that, and this, as I say, if people want an investigation into 9/11, they're going to have to investigate this as well, because it is relevant, and we know that it's relevant. Essentially, we've proved that it's relevant.
Indeed, you've opened up a whole new direction and a whole new angle on the whole affair, and that's why the beauty of internet radio, because we can talk freely and openly, and you can say what you want, and I can say what we want, whereas if this was on mainstream media, well, it wouldn't be on mainstream media, would it?
Well, exactly, you're totally right, and I'm very appreciative for the opportunity to bring this evidence to the attention of people, and, to be quite honest, I really do, sympathise with people if they're thinking, this is just sounds like some total, baloney, because I've never heard of this. If this was really true, I would have heard of it. That's the kind of reaction you get. So you're going to have to go and check this out for yourselves, folks, and see what you make of it, because, I've looked at this now for, we've been looking at this for 2 years. People have tried to cover this up. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to talk about weather control. They don't want to talk about John Hutchison in relation to 9/11. I was invited onto the steering committee of the scholars group by Jim Fetzer, who's well known for his research into the Kennedy assassination, writing some books about it. And then when we made the connection to the Hutchison effect, he basically called me and said that I was being childish when I challenged him over the evidence as to why he couldn't relate to what we were telling him. And he, up to the point of making the connection to the Hutchison effect, he seemed to think that Dr. Judy Wood's research was entirely credible. But as soon as we made the connection to the Hutchison effect, he then started attacking us. And I've written all this up in various articles so people can, make of it what they will if they want to spend the time reading through it all. So, we've really tried very hard, and I've been trying very hard, to raise awareness of these issues. But unfortunately, of course, if you were to present this sort of thing to a parliamentary committee, it's just on a completely different level. They just wouldn't know how to deal with it. And we've all seen, for example, the Hadley CRU, the Climate Research Unit scam, where they've been exposed as massaging the data to promote this idea of global warming. I've certainly collected what I think is pretty good evidence for weather control going on. We've got legislation in the USA which mentions weather control actually being done. Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison's bill and the 2001 Space Preservation Act. All these things, you know, you need to check into them to get a handle for what I'm saying.
Indeed. We're just about out of time now, Andre. Can you just shout out your websites before you go?
Certainly, yes. Well, all the documents for the 9/11 court case are at Dr. Judy Wood's website, drjudywood.com. And if you put in, if you want interested in the court case documents, tinyurl.com/9/11/911QTAM. And if you put that on, it'll bring up the page on Dr. Wood's website, and you'll see all the documents there. You can go and check through it and see that they're all real and everything. They've been filed. My website is checktheevidence.com, all one word, obviously, and you'll find various articles about how this has been covered up, how I've been attacked and we've been attacked for trying to actually raise awareness of this evidence and get people to study it properly. We've done it to the best of our ability. I've tried to make some videos to summarise it and make it easier for people to get to grips with it, you know, to try and make sense of it. That's what you're going to have to do. I give out DVDs, so if people want these DVDs, and they want to email me questions. We haven't had a lot of time for questions tonight, it seems. I'll try and answer any questions that come up. I'm perfectly happy to talk to anyone about this. I'd love to hear from people and get some feedback.
No problem. Andre Johnson, thank you so much for your time and good luck with all your work in the future.
Thank you very much, Tony. Really appreciate it.
All right. No problem, sir. Thank you very much. All right, there goes, folks. That was Andre Johnson. Pretty much taking us up to 10 o'clock tonight. We're going to finish up.